facts and answers as simply as you can.
I'm Ari Brin. Today I'm going to talk about a forgotten science fiction master. He was rediscovered, I believe, in the 1980s by science fiction historian Sam Moskowitz. Prior to that, his work was lost for almost 100 years. The name of this author is Robert Duncan Milne. Robert Duncan Milne predates Wells in many ways. He was writing between 1870-ish to the turn of the century. And my interest in Milne is partially because he had a home in both Scotland and California, currently the two places I'm split between myself. Robert Duncan Milne was born in 1844 in Fife, Scotland, right near where we are today in Dundee. And he studied Latin and classics in college within the UK. But he soon moved to the west coast of America when he was 20, in the midst of the Civil War. And Milne would live in California for the remainder of his life. California was a new state by that point, having just been admitted to the Union 14 years before. And it had just experienced an influx of settlers from the Gold Rush, which officially ended just 10 years before he moved there, and was still ongoing in some ways. The Gold Rush swelled San Francisco's population from just 200 people to over 300,000 in just 50 years. San Francisco was where Milne called home. He based the majority of his stories in San Francisco, and it's obvious that he was extremely inspired by the city. And now, of course, San Francisco is the second most population-dense city in the United States. But he was living in a time when it was a very new city. Land was being filled in just to make room. 99% Invisible podcast did a great episode about this just a few weeks ago, about how if you dig under a lot of the area of San Francisco, you'll discover boats that have been filled in with cement to make room for all the new settlers. In San Francisco, Milne reinvents himself as an inventor, and he begins to write for the local papers. During this time, from 1879 to 1899, Milne publishes over 60 of the most inventive stories of early science fiction. Sam Moskowitz calls this an abrupt conversion into a writer of science fiction. Milne lived a rich cultural life in San Francisco, and he made acquaintances with many of the most important authors of the day, such as Ambrose Bierce and Robert Louis Stevenson, another Scottish writer. And Milne's stories were reflective of the incredible technological excitement of the era. However, Milne tragically struggled with alcoholism, and while drunk, he was hit by one of the classic institutions of San Francisco, the cable car. He died in his mid-40s, unfortunately. And a quote from Moskowitz's book about Milne. Had Milne enjoyed even a single collection of his stories while alive, he undoubtedly would be remembered and enjoy a well-deserved reputation as a pioneer American writer of science fiction. The fact that all his science fiction appeared in newspapers and regional weekly magazines made it swiftly unavailable. He does not deserve oblivion. And I'd say I agree with that. Moskowitz also wrote this extremely flattering passage about Milne. He never avoided the tough questions. He wrote true science fiction. Today I want to give three examples of the technology that Milne saw coming. He was very prescient of the future. And three of the topics that he wrote about. were teleportation, surveillance, and drones. Let's cover teleportation first. You might be thinking, okay, teleportation doesn't really exist yet. But he did see the future in a way. Star Trek uses a very similar method to what Milne wrote about. If you've seen Star Trek, you've seen Captain Kirk fade out slowly and then fade into the planet that he has been beamed down to. This is a process of dematerialization. You break the body down to its elements and you build it back up again. The futurist and physicist Michio Kaku predicts that within 100 years, a similar device to the one in Star Trek will exist. So maybe Milne got it right. We're just a little too early to see it come true. Milne's story, A New Palingenesis, is about a brilliant doctor who invites a colleague to witness a miracle in modern science. The doctor's wife is emaciated and nearly dead, but he has a way to bring her back to life. He places his wife in a glass coffin, which has tubes running from it into another large glass area. Here it gets a little weird, if it wasn't already weird. The doctor fills the glass coffin with a chemical substance that begins to graphically dissolve the body of his wife, flesh, bones, and all. The narrator is, of course, horrified, and he immediately tries to leave the room, but he can't leave. The doctor saw this coming and has electrified the doorknob, so if he dares touch them, he will be electrocuted to death. Luckily, he stays to witness the whole event, which turns out to be less horrifying than a feat of scientific progress. A form begins to take shape within the other reservoir. It's the wife. I'll read a short passage from this. While he was yet speaking, the doctor, the fibrous tracery assumed the distinct form of a human being, and along specific lines of the figure flowed and ebbed a colorless ichor, which gradually took on a reddish hue, and around the endless ramifications of which grew a series of thin, transparent envelopes, which I had no difficulty in classifying as veins and arteries. The changes of appearance were so kaleidoscopic and unexampled in their rapidity that almost before I had time to appreciate the significance and memorize the particulars of one phase of the spectacular lesson in anatomy, another had taken its place. Some pretty flowery writing there, but beautiful in another way. The explanation for this fact that the wife is being materialized in a different glass coffin after her body has been dissolved is that some essence of electrical life remains after death, and that the body contains the properties capable of rebuilding after death, but the ideal circumstances aren't usually provided. The doctor tries to give this electrical spirit the ideal circumstance. He gives it all the elements of rebuilding, pre-dissolved. This may also scientifically explain the presence of ghosts for Milne. They're just imperfectly rebuilt bodies that can't build with the material elements, but the immaterial ones. So in this way, his wife is now a material ghost. Unfortunately, something goes awry, and before the wife has attained her full physical form, she begins to disintegrate away. They must find something to immediately bring her back to life. And the doctor says, there is only one substance which possesses this property, and that is alcohol. Typical Milne. It does work, however, so maybe he's onto something here. So, of course, the story deals with superstition and the supernatural. But Milne deals with every aspect of this story so scientifically, from the anatomy to the chemical properties of the fluid to the description of the apparatus. And he does come up with a somewhat feasible method of teleportation, or life after death. Milne correctly predicted that the world was moving away from practical gadgetry and towards electricity, which at that time you could see how they thought was a type of magic. He foresaw the information age, wherein technology would work to advance the means of communication, the ease of surveillance, and the dispersal of entertainment. His stories deal with instantaneous communication over long distance, kind of like the cell phone, and the television. But perhaps more fascinating are his stories that predict a non-human witness to human activities, and ones that can catch a murderer in the act. Milne's story, A Silent Witness, is about just that. A man accused of murdering his uncle looks set to be decided guilty of the crime. All witnesses have given testimony that seems to put only him at the scene of the crime, and it's looking pretty bad for him. But while humans can lie, a machine cannot. Don't quote me on that. A man brings in his phonograph at the ninth hour, which he's accidentally left on record. Thus, it has been the witness to the actual murder, which was not committed by the accused man, but instead, well, you'll have to read the story to find out. Milne's story correctly predicted the importance of non-human entities in watching human activities. A CC camera allows a human 100 more sets of eyes, and I think Milne saw that coming. And this story was written in the 1880s, which is impressive. Moving on to the third technology that Milne saw coming. Drones. One of Milne's most popular stories of his day was published in the San Francisco Examiner in 1891. It's called A Question of Reciprocity. It's about the horrors of drone warfare and the dangers of undispersed access to technology. It asks, what can happen if one group gets sole control of a hyper-advanced technology? In the story, an inventor of a drone-like unmanned flying machine sells his device to the highest bidder. That bidder happens to be a group of Chilean businessmen who wish to take revenge on the United States for contributing to a financial failure. The drone is equipped with advanced bombs and is sent to hover over San Francisco. It causes a commotion. People have never seen anything like it before. And a letter is dropped addressed to the mayor with a list of demands. A ransom of $20 million is asked from the city of San Francisco, or else the city will be bombed to smithereens. There's nothing to do but panic and attempt to get the money together as quickly as possible. The people of San Francisco don't comprehend how the machine even works. It's kind of like a team from the future travels back to rob the past. It's unfair. I'm sure I've used this quote on my show before, and I'm sure I will again. It's a William Gibson quote. The future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. Milne understood this. Science fiction is all about the question of access to technology. And the fact that super advanced military technology can be used to terrorize less advanced nations is not science fiction, really. Milne's story about drone warfare seems less like science fiction now, and more like reality. In all of Milne's work, the science is not dispersed through the population. Only one or two people have access to any given technology that Milne writes about, usually the brilliant and privileged scientist class, who is able to invent these machines for themselves, and very few of them seem particularly interested in letting the public have access to these technologies. But there's something to say for everyone getting access to something. Surely it's terrifying to think of every citizen having access to their own military drone. But once everyone can get a technology, not just the super rich or privileged, maybe we can begin to regulate it fairly, honestly, and transparently. It's already beginning. Drones are dropping in price, and who knows what will happen once they are as dispersed as cell phones. I think it's going to happen. Living in this age, it's so exciting to read a past idea of our present. Robert Duncan Milne isn't somebody you could likely find in your local bookstore or library, but I hope that'll change. An idea man such as Milne doesn't deserve oblivion. And I hope he will have his day in the future. I hope you enjoyed this quick look at Robert Duncan Milne. If you had heard of him before, then drop me a message, and I'd love to hear what you thought about our show today. As always, you should check us out online. And if you are free this week to come to the roundtable on Monday, you can look that up. It's part of the Being Human Festival, which is all about science fiction and what it means to be human. And it's a wonderful event that Dundee is putting on this month. I will see you next week on Novum.